This is an ABC podcast.
Just a heads up, this show discusses self-harm and suicide. Take care while listening.
Being so young, I couldn't communicate what I was going through. I didn't know what I was going through. I wasn't sure. Also, because I was so young, I thought I was so, like, abnormal.
Until the age of 8, Vanessa had been a generally happy kid. Now things were different.
How I pictured it was like this big storm behind me, like chasing me. That's how I used to picture it when I was little, like a storm chasing me. And the first signs for me were I couldn't sleep and I used to be so tired and I'd just get nervous and not be able to sleep.
The word she didn't know yet that would describe these new feelings was anxiety. She was feeling anxious. And for a long time, she kept these feelings to herself.
And by the time that I finally did have that conversation with my parents, I remember being so shameful. I felt embarrassed, like I was a burden. I remember I didn't want my mum to look at me when I told her. But it wasn't until my mum was able to, I guess, reassure me, tell me everything would be okay and give me a hug.
At the age of 14, Vanessa was formally diagnosed with anxiety and depression. But that didn't make her feel any better, at least not yet.
I didn't take it very well. I got angry and my anxiety and depression tends to come out through anger. So I got very angry and aggressive and I was angry at the doctor and I was just mad.
You're listening to All in the Mind. I'm Sana Qadar. We're well aware that the teenage years can be tumultuous, but did you know that half of all mental health conditions emerge by the age of 14? And on top of regular stressors like school and relationships, teens today have social media to contend with, as well as the COVID pandemic.
The mental health of our young people last year was, it just dive bombed.
So today we ask, are the teens all right?
I'm someone who, even through anxiety, I am quite confident when it comes to like public speaking and that kind of stuff. That's never been something where my anxiety like shows. But I would say my mum definitely noticed that I was a lot happier when I was younger. I guess I'm more pessimistic now, or I can be.
Vanessa is 16 years old now, and coming to accept her anxiety and depression has been a process.
You can know that you feel a certain way, but to have a doctor tell you, like, this is what it is, it can be quite frightening. And I kind of just dismissed it. I was like, it's not true, whatever. And also being 14, like, school, all that kind of stuff. I think year 7 to 10 is a time where friendships can become, like relationships in general can be very challenging to navigate. So being any type of different or thinking you're different can be scary. And I obviously thought I was different.
But she wasn't different. She was actually disturbingly ordinary.
So anxiety and depression will occur in about 20% of our young people. So 1 in 5, which is a pretty remarkable statistic. Suicide rates are at their highest when they are in the teenage years. And then when you look at any of our minority groups, like our LGBTQI populations, they can be up to 13 times higher.
Emerson Osterberg is a clinical, educational, and developmental psychologist working with young people from the ages of 2 to 25. But most of Emerson's patients fall into the tween and teen age group.
So it's a really high-risk group. And some of that is because we've got puberty happening, so we've got changes in hormones, which then can trigger off mental health issues that weren't there. But then we also have environmental factors, which can also set the trigger to underlying anxiety or depression that might have a hereditary component to it, but then is triggered in this stage. And that's really typical.
Emerson says last year's COVID lockdown made everything much worse for many of their clients.
The mental health of our young people last year was, it just dive bombed. I think it dive bombed for most of us, but not having physical connection with people was really challenging. I had a lot of young people whose depression definitely increased, and the rates of suicidal ideation and intent were far greater than I've ever seen them.
Wow.
And as a psychologist managing all of those young people, well, there's not enough psychologists at the moment. It's very hard to get into psychologists because we can see that the need is just so great. But then added into that, any of the young people who were doing year 12 last year, it was year 11 and 12 was really, really stressful, and added stress that we just haven't seen in kids before. Then on the other end, it's those kids who are transitioning even into year 7 who didn't have friend connections. They went to a new school, they were there for a term, and they didn't feel like they fit very well because they hadn't had the usual experiences with these other kids who they were now videoing with.
Were they anxious about the pandemic as well, or was it more sort of the loss of connection and isolation?
Well, they were nervous about the pandemic at first, definitely. It was sort of a bit of a mixed bag, and I think it depended on which age group. But the tweens were very much feeling the disconnection. And if you were more anxious to begin with, or if you had generalized anxiety, then you definitely saw a skyrocket in kids. Even, you know, getting some of my kids back to school after the pandemic was really difficult. We had to do more of a graded exposure to get them back, for them to realize that it was safe. But even in saying that, they've been hearing on the news every day that it wasn't safe. There was still a likelihood that they could get COVID. We couldn't rule that out. So it was a real fear that they were being faced with.
With the harshest lockdowns taking place in Victoria, the situation there was especially dire last year. Amanda Green is a counsellor at Kids Helpline, and she says the service saw a big jump in the number of young people reaching out.
We've received a 21% increase in counselling contacts from young people since 2019. So it's also changed the age groups that are contacting us. For instance, we've seen an 80% increase in 5 to 9-year-olds contacting Kids Helpline, which is pretty significant.
Despite that jump, Amanda says teens still make up the majority of young people contacting Kids Helpline, 56% last year.
On top of that, like when we look at the Victoria specific stats, just because they've had such a harsh experience with COVID, we've actually seen quite a big jump in the amount of young people from Victoria discussing suicide, so feeling suicidal, having suicidal thoughts or ideation.
What do you do when a young person is telling you they feel suicidal?
The first thing I do as a counsellor is assess what they mean by that. There are different levels of suicidality. So for a young person who's saying that they're feeling unsafe or suicidal, that could mean that they're at imminent risk. So they might be actually in a suicide attempt at the moment of their connection with Kids Helpline. Or it could mean that they're having suicidal thoughts, feelings, or even fears, but they're safe in that moment. So once I've assessed where a young person's at, the next step is to take appropriate action. So if a young person is unsafe, then my responsibility is to enact our duty of care response, where we engage with other services such as emergency services who can intervene to keep a young person safe. If a young person has said that they're feeling suicidal, but they're not at imminent risk, then I can spend more time with them, just chatting through what those feelings are like, you know, really naming them, sitting with those feelings and safety planning. So often on a safety plan, you'll have activities such as delaying. Other strategies include distractions, which can be really useful because suicidal feelings often come and go, which means that distracting yourself with things that you enjoy doing, talking to friends, can often get you through those periods where you feel like you want to do it.
For Vanessa, the lockdown experience never got quite so dire, but it was challenging.
At the beginning, I was really scared. I hate change. It's something that I don't deal well with. And just the idea of the unknown, not knowing how long we'd be in isolation, that kind of stuff, that was scary. And at first I was like, I'm not doing this. I don't care. I'm going to see my friends. But once I got into it, I actually found it quite, like, I enjoyed it because I got to go work out heaps and I got to choose when I was going to do my schoolwork. So, I mean, I definitely miss my friends and I miss just going out and having fun with them. But it wasn't like be all end all for me.
Vanessa says one of the bigger stressors in her life overall is social media.
100%. I think social media is so scary.
And she's not alone. A 2019 study published in the Lancet Child and Adolescent Health Journal analysed data from more than 12,000 young people from the ages of 13 to 16 in England. It found teenage girls who frequently use social media may face an especially high risk of mental health issues. Sleep, physical activity, and exposure to cyberbullying account for nearly 60% of that impact.
I'm someone who actually really doesn't enjoy social media. I like the idea of being connected with people that I care about, but it scares me the fact that so many random people have like an opinion on me. I have a small following on social media, so that's scary. I have 14.7K.
Wow.
On my Instagram. And that's, I mean, it's a little bit scary because I know like all these people have a perception of who I am, and a lot of the times they're very wrong. Like my personal mental health, I don't really discuss on my social media because it's not, I mean, it's not really something that I feel anyone cares about. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of them, if they knew that people on behind a screen actually do have a life and, you know, struggles and stresses, I think they'd be really surprised.
Have you ever felt like going off social media for a short period of time to, you know, just decompress from it?
All the time. I always think about getting off social media. And there was a time in year 7, year 8 that I was off for like a year.
Did that help, you know, getting off for a while?
It did help. Like at the time, it did help. But I also feel like because I was in year 7, year 8, there was like you didn't have to have social media to be involved in little year 7, year 8 drama.
There's such a difference between when I was a teenager and got to go home and maybe call a friend for 30 minutes as opposed to being on and making sure you're not missing any of those social connections, because the social connections keep going even when they're not at school. And there's definitely that fear of missing out that's there.
So how do you talk to young people about social media, or what do you advise? Because, you know, we can't escape it. So what can we do?
So one of the things that we usually talk about is what parts of social media bring them joy. And I know that sounds a bit easy, really, but you'll find that there's certain parts that they really like. So some of my kids really like taking photos and posting photos. Some of them really don't like engaging in the conversations. And there's ways around the social media. The kids at school definitely don't know what limits your parents have. And so being able to blame your parents for things can be a really great way of being able to switch off, even if it's for an hour or 2 hours, because there are some parents who definitely still do have limits and will say you can only be on your phone for an hour and then you've got to switch off, or you've got dinner or you're studying. So we try and give realistic excuses to not necessarily have to be on all the time. Mm. We teach them to take breaks, and we also teach them to have someone that they can check in with if they're concerned about what's come up on the social media, so they're not necessarily responding like that knee-jerk reaction. So being able to talk through, and not necessarily one of their friends, but if they've got someone at home that they can talk to, or even when we're in session, we're frequently looking at young people's phones. Mm-hmm. And with their consent, of course, but we work through what they think that this person meant, and that allows them to break down the conversation. Because I think that's the other thing that we're missing out on with this generation of kids, that when conversations were going awry when they were on the phone or when they were face to face with their friends, they would have adults around being able to pick up on things and I guess give input. But most parents aren't seeing what's happening in these conversations. And so there's no adult influence to be able to say, oh, I think this is what they mean, or why don't you try and reply like this and see what happens. So a lot of my young people like it when we go through messages.
Mm, can you give me an example of what you mean in terms of what you're seeing on their phones, these conversations? Like, is it bullying? Is it, you know, just being mean? What's going on?
Some of it can be bullying, but some of it can be just we could have a young person who someone's put on there, I really liked your hair today. And that young person could just be in a bit of a fragile space that day. So they could be viewing that I really liked your hair as that person being mean instead.
Right.
and sort of being sarcastic, and then that can cause them to sit and dwell on that and sort of think over and over and over about it, and then be able to say, oh my goodness, I shouldn't have worn my hair like that. And it can just spiral really quickly over something quite small, really. So teaching them to be able to communicate back to that person and say, did you really mean that you liked my hair, or were you making fun? And sometimes even just asking that question, they don't necessarily think that they should do that. They think they should have this complete understanding of everyone's intent. they can't possibly get that. And that's some of the work that we try and teach our young people. If they misunderstand intent, being able to check in with that person is going to cause a whole lot less problems than just assuming you know what it is and then writing back and say, you know, because it can get nasty. I've seen young people where they've said a fairly mundane comment, but the person's, again, having a bad day, so misinterpreted it and come back at that person with some nasty comment. And then it turns into something bigger. Then you get everyone jumping in and saying how horrible that person is. And it just escalates really, really quickly.
Oh my gosh, this is stressful just hearing you describe it. Yeah. I can't imagine what it's like for, you know, the kids involved.
But it can be really positive. And so I am very much a promoter of we need to educate our kids on how to use social media and how to communicate about intent so that it reduces the likelihood of those misinterpretations and then the just the bang where everything gets out of hand very quickly.
Why do you just choose to stay on? I guess, like, do the benefits sort of outweigh the negatives for you with social media?
Well, I mean, I don't think I'd be talking right now on this if I didn't have social media. I mean, I do like staying connected with my friends, but to be honest, I still question why I stay on, like, my main account, my public account. If I contextualize it, there's a lot more disadvantages or a lot more negatives than positives.
You're listening to All in the Mind. I'm Sana Qadar. Today, the turbulent teenage years and mental health. Vanessa was 8 when her mental health started to decline. Jasper was a bit older. He was 12, and in that time of transition between primary school and high school.
I think it might have started with a friend that I used to have. She wasn't a very good influence for me. My friend would show me really, like, kind of disturbing things I probably shouldn't have been looking at. They would tell me about stuff that they were feeling. So if they were feeling really upset, how they felt when they were upset, what they would do when they were upset. Then they would share stories of other people who have, like, self-harm or a lot of stuff down that kind of track.
Wow. Oh my God. What? I mean, you're so young at this age. Like, what was going through your brain when this was happening?
I suppose I didn't see too much of a problem with it because it started out as, like, they were my best friend. They were my best friend for ages. And so instantly I was like, oh, if I'm around them more, maybe I can help them a little bit, which wasn't the case. And instead I got dragged along for the ride as well. And that was when I was just, like, allowed on the internet. So everything was at my fingertips. It wasn't the best.
Jasper was also struggling with his new high school, where he had no friends at all. Everyone from his primary school had gone somewhere else.
I was sad almost all the time for no reason at all. Was constantly fatigued. I didn't like to go out and do anything. It was actually my nan who I went to, because I live with my nan as well as my mum. Mm-hmm. And so it was probably the worst time of my life. I remember the day, like that night, as clear as crystal. I was at my absolute worst and I was like, no, I'm ending it now. So I came out, showed how I was feeling, what I was feeling. And then she was like, all right, we're getting help.
Jasper is lucky. He has a close relationship with his nan, so he was comfortable opening up about how he was feeling. He's now 18 years old.
It's been a lot better for sure. Like, I've still got anxiety. I've still got depression. But the difference is now I know how to deal with it.
What do you do and what are your sort of triggers?
For anxiety, I understand it a lot better. I know how to calm myself down. I'm anxious all the time, like counting down the seconds to this call. I was like, okay, just calm down. I know exactly what I got to do. So it pops up a lot in life. But I know at the end of the day, it's going to be fine. I'll just do it. It'll be over. And then I can continue doing what I'm doing. Having that just like clarity or like that comfort that it will end, it's going to be over and then I won't stress about it anymore.
There is one area of Jasper's life that hasn't caused much anxiety though, and that's coming out as trans.
There wasn't a whole lot of anxiety that came with it. Ironic, because I'm anxious about everything else. But this was something I was so sure about in my life that I didn't have a lot of anxiety towards it. But that being said, there still were moments where I might have felt scared to be out.
Jasper came out 2 years ago when he was 16. So how does he feel now?
Better than ever, really. Just gotten top surgery, so that's a huge weight has been lifted off my chest. but it's still a process. I'm still transitioning. I've lived my life up until now with someone else's body, and now I'm finally changing it and fixing it so that it's me.
We mentioned this at the beginning, but it bears repeating that half of all mental health conditions emerge by age 14, and suicide is the leading cause of death for young people aged 5 to 17, according to the Black Dog Institute. It's why prevention and intervention are so crucial with this age group, and that involves equipping young people with certain skills.
When you're working in with this population of kids, a lot of them don't know what's happening to them. And so they start feeling different and they associate different with being bad. And so sometimes they don't want to tell anyone.
The first skill I would say is actually having mental health literacy. So it's actually being able to understand your mental health. And in younger people, we're talking about, you know, naming to taming. We're actually just talking about the basic stuff like understanding your emotions and being able to articulate them. If you're teaching a child about their emotions, it might take you 1,000 times of saying to them, you're crying, you feel sad. And it's okay to feel sad, and helping them to self-soothe and, you know, actually learn how to manage their emotions.
To that end, there's a new ABC show that's trying to do that, but with humour. Well, what do you do when you get a degree? You open up your own psychology practice. It's called Mickey vs. the World, and it's aimed at tweens.
Very bad. There's no way I could do a singing competition.
There's no way we can do a singing competition.
Yeah, I just said that.
I know, I was just reaffirming.
Who are you?
Oh, don't you know? I'm Worried Wayne. I'm your anxiety.
The main character, Mickey, is a psychologist, and when she's going through challenges herself, she consults her teen squad via Zoom. Teens, because even though the show is aimed at tweens, they tend to look up to older kids.
Hi, Mickey.
Hey, friends. Just wondering, have you ever felt anxious?
I feel anxious all the time, even now.
Why do you think a show like this is helpful?
Oh, it's so helpful. Number one, it's normalizing. It's normalizing mental health. We all have mental health at one point in our life for different reasons. So to allow kids access to be able to see these shows and feel like there is nothing wrong with them, that this is just a part of their journey of life.
Apart from anxiety, the show covers topics like toxic friendships, conflicts with parents, sibling rivalry, peer pressure, even shame.
Have you ever wanted to feel really terrible about yourself? Then you need me. Hi, I'm Shame. I'm here to capture all your greatest fails so that we never, ever forget. Like and subscribe.
It can be really hard to do something with humour and a sense of fun, but to actually also address deep issues, dark issues, hard issues, tricky issues, challenging issues, and to do it well.
Both Emerson and Amanda consulted on the show, and Jasper and Vanessa were part of Mickey's teen squad.
That was, yeah, it was really cool. I mean, I was, it was in the middle of lockdown. I didn't think that it was possible to have these like conversations about mental health, these serious conversations about mental health in a way that was entertaining and also like appropriate for a younger audience. But I actually really enjoyed it, and I was surprised that they were able to like pull that off.
I always enjoy talking about this kind of stuff because it's nice to speak out loud. So when, like, I talk about it to other people, when I've been talking about it with you guys, it's been really good for me as well because it allows me to get out of my head and see what's going on.
Do you think your generation is sort of changing, you know, how people talk about mental health in that there is less stigma with your generation?
Absolutely, yeah. I've talked to my nan about it a couple of times, and she always mentions how it feels like every other person now has a mental illness. And I've got to try to explain to her, it's true. A lot of people suffer from mental illness today, But that's because we can identify it now, where a lot of the time people go undiagnosed and can live their life with so much more turmoil than they need to.
I don't know if it's just the people that I'm surrounded by, but when I first started talking about it, I didn't really feel any type of stigma at all, because it was kind of just like, oh yeah, that's cool. Like, anyways, I was acknowledged, but it wasn't something where it had to be this deep conversation, which is something that I wanted. Like, I didn't want it to be this big thing. And that first time, it was kind of just like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then that was it. We just moved on. And I think that kind of opened the space where I was able to actually talk about in detail what I was going through, for not just myself, but for like the whole group.
Apart from talking to friends and seeing a therapist, there's one other strategy that's always helped Vanessa deal with her anxiety and depression.
Almost every time that I've gone through a dip in my mental health, I have gone back to my country, and surrounded myself with mob. So I'm a proud Ngarrabung Kanamagal woman from the Darug and Kamilaroi Nations. When I was like 13, 14, when I was having a dip in my mental health, being around elders, being around community, like that's always been something that when I'm feeling not so good that I go to.
Why do you think connecting to culture helps you so much?
I think that they say it takes a tribe to raise a child or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that rings true for like Blackfellas. I think most people are aware that mental health is a really dangerous and rising issue in Aboriginal youth, especially for our young Black boys. Suicide rates are through the roof. And if you're feeling lost, which I think for a lot of Indigenous youth, that can be a big part of struggles with mental health, feeling lost. Being able to go back to a community and learn the old ways is important, because you know, you got to know where you've been to know where you're going.
And whether it's connection to country or just the connection between parents and kids, connection is what it all comes down to.
My advice to parents would be never stop talking to your kids, and that your connection is vital. And if you can find a way to connect, and that can be texting them. You know, when we've got breakdowns between parents and kiddos or teenagers, and parents will say they're on their phone all the time, and I'll say, well, text them, they're on their phone, they're going to see your message. That connection can be the biggest difference between a kid being okay and being able for your kids to know that you love them no matter what. That's unconditional, no matter what their school grades are, no matter what gender they identify with, no matter who they go out with, no matter whether they steal a Mars bar from the shop, no matter what mistakes they make, that you're going to be there and they're going to be able to get through it with you, makes the biggest difference in an adolescent's life.
That's Emerson Osterberg, a clinical psychologist based in Sydney. And before them, we heard from Vanessa, a Year 11 student. We also heard from Kids Helpline counsellor Amanda Green and 18-year-old Jasper. And if you or anyone you know needs help, reach out and talk to somebody. You can call Kids Helpline on 1800 551 800 or Lifeline on 13 11 14. Thanks to the folks at Mickey vs. the World for their help with this episode. You can watch the show anytime on ABC iView or watch Sundays at 5 p.m. on ABC Me. That's it for All in the Mind this week. Our producer is James Bullen. Sound engineer is Isabella Troppiano. I'm Sana Kadar. Catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.